since the announcement of the murder indictment of Officer Van Dyke, followed soon after by the release of the video from the dash cam camera showing what happened on October 20th, 2014, people have been taking to the streets in Chicago. As far as I know, the demonstrations have been peaceful but continued. So it's definitely a matter of tremendous public concern and outrage.
From the coverage I saw, it looked like there were thousands of people in the streets.
Yeah, I think it's been pretty continuous. I haven't seen what's happening today. I would also expect it to build, as people comprehend a set of issues beyond the video. For the last week plus since the judge ruled, the video has been the primary focus. But I think there are some fundamental issues about how the city handled this case from the first moment, as the young man was lying in the street dying, that now are going to come to the foreground. And I think that's going to arouse more public concern and public outrage. The reality here is everything we now know about what happened more than a year ago on the southwest side of Chicago, everything we now know, having seen the video, was known by the police department and by the city within hours of the incident. They had the video. There were multiple witnesses to what happened. The autopsy, which revealed that there were 16 independent gunshot wounds, was begun at 8:30 the following morning. He was declared dead at 10:45 or thereabouts. And the next morning at 8:30, the autopsy was performed with an investigator from the Independent Police Review Authority, the agency tasked with investigating police shootings in the room as the autopsy was performed. That's the basic information about what happened. And the city, the police department, issued a press release in the middle of that night that was patently false. A spokesman for the police union at the scene spoke to media and gave essentially the same account in more colorful language, to the effect that a young man with a knife, and actually the police spokesman said seeming crazed, lunged with a knife at a police officer who had no choice but to defend himself. The young man was shot in the chest, died sometime later at a nearby hospital. That was the story that was put out by the city and by the Fraternal Order of Police. And we now know that that narrative, I mean, really, to call it a fabrication is generous, and that was just an outright falsehood. And until recently, that has been the city's narrative. You know, now how somebody figured out more than 400 days later we get an indictment, well over a year. If this had been a gang shooting, you know, I think it, with this kind of evidence, with the video evidence, with the current witnesses at the scene, with the autopsy, you know, an indictment would have been returned in a matter of weeks at most. So there are a lot of questions here about how this was handled by the city. And I think that's what's going to emerge to the fore as the primary point of conversation going forward.
So when did it become apparent to you that the case seemed to have more significance? For instance, the fact that the teenager holding the knife was shot 16 times?
The autopsy was performed, you know, less than 24 hours after the shooting. It only became public and subject to Freedom of Information Act request a few months later. But when I got my hands on it, I wrote an article for the publication Slate, which detailed the contents of the autopsy and the fact that there was just no way to square the absolutely definitive information in the autopsy report with the account that the city was giving of what had happened. So that's kind of the earlier history.
You were a catalyst in getting the real story out in the public eye. Now here we are a year later and the protests are just happening, which is much different than what happened, for instance, in Ferguson. Talk about the important developments earlier this year regarding the video of the shooting happening.
Early March, lawyers for the McDonald family, they were able kind of through a backdoor process to obtain a copy of the video. So they had a copy of the video. They had not yet filed. They were preparing a wrongful death civil lawsuit but they hadn't filed a lawsuit. They had the video. They contacted the city law department and began negotiations, which with the video as their leverage, which culminated in a settlement of $5 million for the family. A settlement, the settlement agreement is conditioned on not releasing the video. The family, for their own reasons, did not want to release the video. But the point is that the city, in the midst of the mayor's reelection campaign, entered into a $5 million settlement, clearly directed toward, I don't want to only characterize it in terms of suppressing the video, but it certainly had that function. 6 days, less than a week after the mayor was reelected, the settlement was announced. And at that point, there was tremendous public interest calls. We had made the call for release of the video in December of 2014. In April, when the Emanuel administration announced the settlement, both Chicago papers, the New York Times, various political figures all called for release of the video. And the city then said, yes, we will release the video, but we won't release it while there's pending investigation or any criminal process, you know, criminal prosecution that ensues. So when you think about these different points in the narrative, there are, I think, real questions about the use of investigation as a kind of cover-up, a kind of deferral. This was public information that was suppressed and withheld from the public by the city. And the use of investigation, to say we have a pending investigation so we can't release it, is, I think, one of the practices that needs to be questioned and challenged in this case.
You said something like the case of Laquan McDonald is liable to happen again in Chicago. Do you predict changes being made to prevent these sorts of things from happening?
The critical question when they do is, how do our institutions respond? Because if they respond by falsifying the record, by not pursuing vigorous investigations, they ensure that there will be future victims. Not only do the victims in the given episode not get justice, those patterns of failing to investigate and of really telling lies about what happened and circling the wagons, that creates conditions going forward for more victims, more abuse, and more moments like this.